Borough Zoning Board, Wednesday, June 26, 2019.
We're not sure about that. I think we can call the meeting to order and start with a review of minutes from last time.
I won't be able to approve this.
Oh, okay.
Because I wasn't here, so I can't vote. So you can hold the minutes up till maybe shows up?
Yeah. My preference is to do that. Well, we can start. We can get started. We can go over the basics of this. We can catch that up if we need to. So let's start with appeal number 816. It's a request of Rebecca Wilkley of 47 Sweets Road, Hansbury, North 12831, for a special permit pursuant to Chapter 149, Article 5, Section 149-33. The applicant's requesting a home occupation for a home-based business involving the application of polymer ceramic coating on metal, plastic, polymer, and wood. This property is located in an R5 zoning, two-family residential agricultural zoning district, and is designated as 77.1-43.2 on the town assessment map. So, who do we have here?
I'm here for Rebecca. That's my wife. I'm also owner of the business. And
you are?
Bart Ripley.
I'll follow you on the paperwork there, sir.
Okay. Tell me your name.
Bart, B-A-R-T. Bart. Full name, Bart. Should be on there, sir.
Okay. Can you tell me what this business entails?
The primary purpose is the application of Cerakote, which is a polymer ceramic based paint. It's sprayed on as a protective coating. Goes on various things, including like firearms, car parts, that type of thing. It's sprayed on and then bathed onto it. On variation applications. I went to school to be certified as an applicator in Oregon for it. And with the firearms, obviously, there's got an ATF with an FFL, and I've also got state permits for that as well. They're in the process of that. That's all. The federal is done. I'm waiting to state. I don't see any issues with any of that type of stuff.
And that's actually how it came here, because ATF requires indication that it's got local zoning approval. So that's why they applied.
At that time, they did, sir.
So, I mean, what is it? Is it primarily firearms?
It's a variation. You can go on auto parts. They have one that does the type of paint, some of the Cerakote that seals in heat that you can use on an exhaust, something like that, ATV parts, any tractor parts, whatever you would want a ceramic protective coating on.
So is there a protective coating from heat? Or?
It can be. There's certain applications from that and sealing the heat. And if you wanted to put it on the manifold of your exhaust to keep the heat inside of that and force it out away from the engine, you could do something like that. The primary for firearms is to protect it. Instead of gluing it, you would use Cerakote. And it's much more durable. And you can also customize it with different colors and that type of thing.
And what is the process? I mean, what's
it's the process is you prep it. Usually you take the finish that is on whatever item you have. It has to be a clean surface to get it on there. It's usually by a sand lab, like I have a glass cabinet, glass. And then it's clean it off after that. And then it's a paint on, which is it's a very thin coating. It's about 4 mils thick. And then after that, it goes and bakes on about 180 degrees for about an hour.
So not extremely high temperature?
No, not at all.
Is it like an oven that you have on site? Or?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
Is something you currently do as an occupation and you can bring it home, or is it something brand new that you're getting involved with?
It's something new that I've gotten into. I've done it at other locations previously, but I'm starting doing it from my house. As a part-time. It's not my full-time occupation.
Okay.
This is ceramic coating.
Ceramic polymer-based coating, that's correct, sir.
And in what size, how large a line can you paint?
Um,
I mean, in your shop, where you want to set it up?
I built a sealed off booth. My booth is 9 feet by 9 feet, all sealed off and 8 feet high, and my oven is 4 feet deep and 6 feet high, so 4x4x6, so I mean, something to that effect. I couldn't get a full car in there, but I mean, it's primarily, so I did a rifle barrel in there. It's like that hang, obviously, you can't set on anything with paint on it.
Is it a residential application in terms of, is it electric oven? In terms
yes,
of how
it is.
It's powered?
Yes, sir.
Is it a manufactured device?
It is a professionally built oven that I bought from Iowa and had shipped in and then had it wired in professionally as well.
Okay.
That's correct.
So it runs off the house electricity?
That's correct, yes, sir.
And the booth, you have like a spray booth?
That's correct, I built one.
That's how
built.
How is that? Is that set up with the filters and things?
Where
the exhaust goes out, it filters out all the...
There's minimal overspray with it. Yes, sir. I built the booth, it's sealed in, and I have filtered air coming in, obviously, and then two filters going out, so it goes across. It's an actual paint filter, and then another regular filter going out before it meets the outside. The odor is very minimal, it's all sealed in there. And I have exhaust going outside of my house. If you stand outside, you can't even smell the paint. I actually have grass going under the bank, so it's not noticeable anywhere else in the house or anywhere else.
The sandblasting, was that created?
No, it's just minimal dust. It's all sealed in as well. It's in a cabinet, sealed off, and then it just recycles and stuff. No more than like a vacuum. It actually has a vacuum hooked up to it.
Just to confirm on the record, it was explained to me that this is completely like wholesale. No customers come to the home.
That's true. I have no desire to have people come to my house. It'll be, my idea is to, with the guns, is to go to a gun shop, contract with them, have them generate the business, contact me, I go pick them up, bring them, do my thing, get it back to them.
Okay.
That's my business plan.
There's a gentleman standing in the back of the one
where they took the bag to talk at some point. Yeah, are you here to talk about this?
Yes, I am, sir.
We do have a public hearing. Part of this whole process.
Okay.
But after the board is done talking to folks,
okay,
asking to make comments. So take my word. We have none.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
So you're soliciting businesses?
eventually I will. That's my plan, yeah.
What I would like to see. This probably must have an MSDS.
Yeah, they've been submitted within the packet, sir.
It is in the packet?
Yes.
Did I miss it?
I have copies of them if you want to see them.
It's a small one, but no?
No, I have.
The MSDS sheet is important because that's going to give us an idea of what the product is, what the
right.
Possible harmful effects of it is.
These are examples of them in this. It's a flammable, but just like any other household is good, but it is not combustible.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a copy of that in the file.
Okay, that might be my area. I didn't get a couple of other questions, but those are.
We'll look at it.
Mm-hmm. taking me about 6 weeks to go through this.
So you're talking about, you would, a gallon? If you put the number of bottles together, 2 gallons, you did?
I don't think it's that, it's probably closer to half.
Half a gallon?
And it has a shelf life, so it's no use in storing it off.
It has a shelf life. Okay. And what is that?
It's about a year.
I think each one of these plants is this. Did we have a, I read a lot of stuff in my message, the amount of land in this house is that?
It's just under 5. I think it's like 4.8 something.
Oh, all right, it says only 1 acre is cleared, okay.
Yes,
so you got about 5 acres?
Yes, sir.
Requirements are for you.
And or as firearms?
Well, for all of that. For, you know, the state, is that just the firearms? Is what you're doing with the federal that has nothing to do with the bank?
That's correct.
It's just for the firearms?
Correct. In order to possess someone else's firearms, I have to have an FFL level 1.
So that wasn't, had nothing to do with the bank, though. It was
strictly firearms. That's correct.
Right.
And the state is also, you have to use the federal through the ATF, which I've already gotten, and then to get your state, you have to have your federal already, so I'm in the process of that. I see no issues with any of that, but it's otherwise.
I know you're a little bit late, or you already talked a little about the ventilation, but I know it's I've been part of these paint booths myself in different various parts. I'm just curious as far as, you know, ventilation. You go back a little bit with me as far as,
sure.
Is there any regulations that you have? I know you said you talked about there's not, is that, it's in the basement right now?
Right.
It's not back in the house, so that's obviously good.
No, I've sealed it off. I've sealed the whole paint booth off when I built, and I filtered the air coming in, and then it's filtered twice going out, and then vented outside.
And you're essentially going into the booth, though, and you've got the gear out, you've got the NPF-50 mask on, and you're going through all that, and you're going through those two filters. Is there any requirements that are supposed to be, I might go through the sewer course, but as far as like, those types of filters, what types you're using, how often they even change, if any regulatory processes to check on any of that stuff, or how does that shake out exactly? I was not meaning the first one.
That would be more of a town.
That's fine.
If we were to do that, I mean, there is no regulatory agency that I know of, even for the painting shops that are in our town, the auto shops.
There's a lot of hobbyists around who
paint
cars.
I'm more into the painting shows. It's not just the safety to him as well. It's the safety.
But I'm just saying, I don't think there's any regulatory agency that even checks the body shop.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't keep the filter clean, The it doesn't work.
The fan will plug up and it won't work. Work and then you won't be able to paint anything. A lot of people that spray the Cerakote in the shops that I've been to when I've researched it, if you go into their shops, they don't even have a separate room. They just have a wall with the filters on it and sucks it out through there. Yeah. Mine's actually
sealed off. You've got to seal off it separately. Yeah. With being under your house, which would be very wise.
How close is your nearest neighbor? On each side, or?
That would be the closest one. Then there's obviously, there's nobody behind me in front. That would be the first one, then the other one's probably 100, and the other one's probably 80.
Okay, now on this, the amendment to the application here, it says that no signage or retail sales on site, no customer foot traffic, and I guess no customer car traffic either. And there are no business hours or physical address advertised. All of your deliveries are through UPS, FedEx, or your own vehicles. Having said that in this application, that would be what we would approve. Those would be the conditions of the approval, I would expect.
If we did.
Sure. Yes, sir.
That means that you can't change that without coming back.
Very much so. I don't have any, like I said before, I don't have any desire to have people in my house. I have a family.
Okay. I guess the question is, does this fit under the home occupation? When we look at that, we look at things that the conditions, it's a special permit for a home occupation. And conditions are that first that such use will not endanger the health, safety, moral, and welfare of the neighborhood or adversely affect the environment. And second is that off-street parking spaces are adequate to handle expected attendance. And third is that the neighborhood character and surrounding property values are not endangered. And the fourth is that such use will not cause new traffic congestion or create a traffic hazard. And we can specify appropriate conditions to protect the option of and to ensure continuity of such protection. So those are the conditions that we have to meet. And basically, in terms of the definition of home occupation, I have no way to use it.
I have it here, so I'm going to read it.
Home
occupations and accessory use of a service character customarily conducted within a dwelling by the residents thereof, which is clearly secondary to the use of the dwelling for living purposes and does not change the character thereof or have any exterior evidence of such secondary use other than a sign or nameplate attached to the building, which sign or nameplate shall not exceed 3 square feet in size. And then two subsets, letter A, a home occupation includes but is not limited to artist, studio, dressmaking, professional offices of a physician, dentist, lawyer, engineer, architect, or accountant within a dwelling occupied by the same, teaching with musical instruction limited to a single pupil at one time, barbershops and beauty parlors, real estate offices, and similar businesses. A home occupation shall be allowed 1 employee. Subset B, in addition, home occupation shall be interpreted to include the sale of stock and trade commodities directly related to permitted home occupation by the resident thereof for sale to the general public. That's it.
Questions from the board? Do we have any comments from Any letters have been written?
Nope, but we did notice the hearing, so the letters went out in a timely and lawful manner.
I think we have some people that want to speak.
How's it going? I'm Michael Morrissey.
And where do you live?
I own the property of my parents. Live on Ski Road. I own two lots on Ski Road.
And what road?
On Ski
Road.
Yes.
I'm sorry, my ears are...
Yeah. We had the same problem back here. We couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, all right. So tell us what's going on.
Well, we had quite a concern about this because in painting, you have lacquer thinners and you have other things that you reduce paint with that go through filters, but you still have overfilling out into the air. We are the neighbor, and I have a big concern about this. You know, and it's R5, it's not commercial, it's, there's, in the rules that I've ever seen, can't run a business out of there, unless you're a farmer. Right? It's art, right? Or wrong?
Well, if we decide this is a home application, you can't.
Oh, you can't?
We have home applications that we have approved.
And in the MSDS sheet that we just read, there's no lacquer thinner or anything that uses this process. There's nothing of that nature that I can say. Am I speaking correctly? Because the NSCS sheet gives us pretty much the detail of what that product is and how it's used. So it's a pretty limited thing that he's looking to do.
Well, I mean, if you grant something like this and it becomes bigger, you know what I mean? You get traffic, you get UPS back and forth, you get more fumes in here. If it was next to your house, would you want to smell any fumes coming out of my house? I don't want my parents. They have asthma. That's the bottom line.
Understood, but as I explained to the applicant, he's listed these things basically that says he's not planning on any traffic here now other than for UPS trucks, you know, and delivery people. But that could be anybody, you know, anybody could have anything.
We buy at Amazon all the time.
Yeah. Right. And he can't change this. He can't expand it to, you know, to have something where it's a business.
Well, and it is a dead end road. So if we see more vehicles coming or anything like that, you guys will be the first ones to know if you pass this.
Okay. Well, I think Mr. Martin will probably be the first.
Yes, I'll be the first to know. Yes.
Mr. Driver, I mean, it's an enforcement issue. If that becomes a problem, it doesn't sound like he's interested in that kind. Because we don't, that's, then it is not a home occupation.
So if you grant it and we do smell this, then it affects my parents.
That absolutely should be here.
Yeah, so you'd make a complaint and tell me that would probably indicate to the zoning department, the building inspector, that there was a problem and they can inspect it because there should be no overly smell on this from that MSDS sheet.
Because I used to paint cars 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, that was a good...
Right, I understand.
I think the other thing, I'm not saying we're going to approve this, we're looking at it, we're discussing it, doesn't mean I'm, you know, saying I'm going to approve it. But if we were to approve it, we put all these regulations on this. Mm-hmm. He's agreed to that there would be nobody bringing stuff there. So if you, once you put that in writing, and you, if that happens, you complain to the town, they have means to say that can't happen, and then they can start action if they have to. It's fast. So it really gives a lot of the fact that they come before us, and if we choose to grant it with those stipulations, it gives you more leverage than you would have if he hadn't come before us, to be quite honest. Because a person can paint the car in their garage. And as a neighbor, he's working on his car, and the owners come over and bother you, and you call the town, they say they go down there, and the guy's not running the business, he's touching up his car, and they can't stop.
Right, no, I understand.
You know, so it literally gives you more, if we were to do it, more grounds to make sure that he doesn't do anything that's going to really affect your neighbor, you as your neighbors. If I'm making myself, am I making sense?
Yeah, you
are. So that does help.
I've been the run over, sir. Essentially.
Is there any DEC regulations, clean air, anything like that?
Well, the MSDS sheet, and you guys, where is that? Can we pass that back down to Jim? Because he's going to have to have that, because he's going to have it looks to me like the amount that we're talking of the volatility of this is
I understand, but say he gets a bigger project. Well, and it grows a little bigger. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to deal with that. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think, but by what he's built and what we, if we should have to agree with, he couldn't make it bigger. He can't make it bigger. He really did. If he would have to come before us to get approval to do that. So I don't know what the board's thoughts are going to be. I just want to say that if we were to consider it, there will be a lot of stipulations, which he actually wrote down himself. I mean, he gave us a list of, you know, no signage, no retail sales. He went down and did a really nice job of saying, I don't want to do any of that. I don't want it for my family, and I don't want it for my neighbors. So that would be in writing, and that would be a part of it if we should choose to approve it. And I mean, if you want to see this,
I would like a copy of that.
Can you give him a copy of this?
But yeah.
You can have my copy of it.
Of the application?
Huh?
Of the application?
No, of what
the MSDS
said.
Yep. Yeah, that's part of the application.
Let me have a copy of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have that.
There's some of the personal information that I'm trying not to fill out.
Well, is we all.
No,
do we need to.
It's my mail house.
Yeah. Oh, is there something under
this? This here?
No, the layout of my house.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no. We're only, all I'm talking about is this.
Yeah.
Just your list of things that you need. So you can add that.
Oh.
And you can see that it's very detailed.
Roger, anything to say? Want to ask any questions?
Yes, I do have a question as far as, did I hear Glenn was mentioned? Can you tell us your name and where you live?
Your name, Roger.
Roger Dillon, 28th Street Road.
Okay. He is... went and applied to the federal government, to the state, for ATF to be able to do what is it would be doing parts again, right?
Yeah, essentially outside.
He would be paying the toning put over the barrels and guns and stuff instead of doing the blueing that we normally did on guns.
Yeah.
This is a product that you put over and it's permanent. They don't have to redo it. You don't have to do the blueing like we always did.
So it's not a complete firearm.
Is it, would you have complete firearms in the
location? I would, and I would disassemble them.
He would have complete firearms, he would disassemble them, paint them, and put them back together, and send them back out.
Does that include pistols?
Yes, it can, sure.
And do you have the correct permit to
handle that's what he's doing. He's applying to the ATF, the federal government, and the state to get licensing to be able to do that.
So he'll be a dealer then.
He won't be a gun dealer. He'll have the ability to handle guns.
There's in a
is it a dealer license?
It's at the file level one is a gunsmithing gun dealer license.
It is a license.
I am not be selling firearms out of the residence. I have to get those both in order to possess them.
Right.
Because this is considered.
But what we can also put is if we should choose to approve it, we could put in there that there'd be there's no sale from the location. No sales of guns and stuff.
I guess my question would be, how does the firearm get from the customer to you?
It would be shipped. It's either going to be shipped to me or I would transport it myself, therefore needing those licenses to possess them to get them there.
Because a gun you can't have a pistol. That's a very big... I have a pistol permit. You got to follow the rules or you're in trouble.
Okay, because then you got to fill out paperwork on every pistol that gets carried from one person to his office.
He has to sign for that to receive it.
It's ATF regulation.
Right, it's a regulation. It is very regulated. I mean,
it's not a town
rule. It's certainly right. That falls right into the federal government's rules. That's not our rules. But that's requirements that we have. As I have a pistol holder, I mean, I have a pistol holder. Very important that you follow the rules. That's a big
yes, I understand. I got pistols myself.
expecting to deal primarily with gun dealers.
Hopefully,
I think that's going to be the majority of the business. I mean, it sounds like this product, if it works the way you say it, that would be very helpful for people that have rifles. But you don't have to blow them. You don't have to do that.
Right. It's got a lot of applications. Even the military is using it for different aircraft parts and all that type of stuff. It's got several applications. It's expanding field. But, yes, that's my...
So you may be dealing with individual veterans.
It's possible, but I will have them report to... the gun dealer, gun shop, something like that, so they're not at my house. I do not want somebody bringing a firearm into my house. As my profession, and as I said, this is a part-time job, I'm not jeopardizing all of those for the application.
Did you get that?
Did you hear what he was saying?
Some of it, yes.
Basically, he's saying he doesn't want the firearm owners to come to his house. He wants them to deal with him through gun dealers.
I understood that, so, on the other document. And he said he was going to either transport them or they were going to be shipped.
Right. That's also federally regulated on how you have to do that, sir.
I think he's right out back of me.
Yeah.
I've just turned off the chemical, the liquid, whatever. You have to contain that pretty well. Couldn't get into the groundwater
or anything. Right. Very important. Did you see the size of the bottles of products that he uses?
Kevin, everybody is going to grow bigger. That little bottle is just an example.
No, I understand
He could have 10 one-gallon jugs.
No.
You ain't going to know that. I'm not going to know that.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I understand the concern. What I'm hearing from the applicant is that he doesn't want to waste that product. Is there a cleaning fluid that you're going to be using or anything like that?
Very minimal amounts of acetone to clean it. And that is, like I said, there's no water, there's no drain. I don't want to put that stuff in my septic and ruin my septic.
So how, if you were to use any of this to clean it, how does that process work?
After I'm done, I clean my spray gun. That's all I have to clean, which is very small. And I'm cleaning that with a paper towel and acetone, wiping it down, and then I'm putting it in a plastic bag in my garbage, and it's going in the garbage. With acetone, as you know, dries up almost instantly, so it's hard to keep
it. And it's not like oil based.
Correct. It's nail polish remover, essentially.
I've always had to blow air through my gun to make sure all of it was out. Mm-hmm. So... I mean, I don't think you can clean every surface little hole in a paint gun. So you got to take it apart and you got to blow air through it to get everything out.
But if you spray it out, it's...
into the air or wherever.
It would be in that booth and it would be the same as if you can spray it with the product you spray it, the barrel. So that's different.
I think we're concerned about this vapor or whatever the smell, the filters... if it gets out, when we come down here, we like the fresh air, the back porch, and the air is clean, that's why we're up here.
May I make a statement, please? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I have 3 kids. One of them is special needs kids, who's more susceptible to illness than most other people. They live in this house. And I would also ask them what it smells like, because I've been spraying it every other day for the past 6 months, and I've got nobody coming to me asking me anything or any type of issues whatsoever. So if there was an issue or if you did think it was an issue, you already smelled it and then traced it back to me. I've been spraying my own stuff for 6 months every other day. I really don't see... If there was an issue, I believe you already would have known about it.
You haven't smelled anything in the last 6 months, have you?
I believe that's...
I mean, I think that's, as I've said, if we're doing this, I always want to make sure you understand it, but if we should choose to approve this, there again, you have more say in this. If you did get orders and you bring it to the town, we can deal with it, whereas if he hadn't come before us and we chose, and we had nothing to do with this, you really wouldn't have any recourse if you had no smell and you go to the town. But a lot of times the town can't do it.
We did get smells and then we were reported.
I'm the one that's got the COPD.
Oh, yes.
And I'm allergic to chemicals.
Oh, yeah. And that can be very bad.
I'm really afraid that, you know, if there's any chemicals, come on, I don't want them.
No,
and smelling.
And I totally support that. I just had a sister that had a chemical breathing reaction that actually caused her to have a heart attack. So I didn't even know I could have it.
And the other thing is that if we plan to sell it, knowing if there's a business next door, is somebody else going to want to buy it? Is it reducing my cost on the house? You know what I mean? Because of the business next door?
Have the requirement.
We always take all that into consideration. Am I correct?
Yes, that is part of the condition. It did not change the values of it. It not detriment.
Right.
It did not be a detriment to the homeowners.
Right.
I'll be honest with you, I don't see where this, first of all, nobody even knows that there's a business there. UPS trucks can go in that house all the time, but there's no sign, there's no customer parking, there's nothing there. And as long as you've got the conditions and you know what they are, if you all of a sudden see a sign, you start seeing people parking there and staying for a few, then you can complain. Whereas if you have a neighbor that just has a whole bunch of people there and gets a lot of Amazon deliveries, you've got nothing. You've got no
wheels. Well, and I think if the chemicals are beauty parlor.
Right.
And a beauty parlor, we wouldn't even have this discussion. Because if they applied for a beauty parlor to be there, it's almost a guilt.
Well, to say it's a home occupation.
We still have to do it, but I mean, it's, and they have probably more chemicals than what I'm seeing with what I run in that MSDS. That would be even more of a chemical problem. So, I think it's the fact that he's willing to tell us that there will be the impact of the neighborhood will be minuscule because of what he's agreeing to allow us, if we should choose to do it, to put in as the restrictions. That there will be no sign, there will be no customers that come to the door, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. That helps.
Do we have any other comments from any other folks?
Any other questions?
No.
Have we answered your questions, or at least addressed your questions?
Pretty much. I do have one other concern would be the disposal of the residue in the bottles as far as hazardous waste goes.
No, how are the bottles disposed of? I have it right here. This is the only one I've used. But this would just be like a regular empty can. It's empty.
The only thing is they won't take it with their wet, so you have to leave it with the tab off and let it out.
Okay.
I mean, that's literally,
that's not anything that
that's literally what we have to do with anything we have from where I work. We have to, if with the north, you really can, but you can't throw that can out, even if it's latex, wall paint, you can't throw that can out with it wet. It has to be dry. So what we have to do is when we use up a can of paint, you open the top, leave it aside, it dries, then it can be disposed of. And that's probably, I'm just saying from my experience that.
I haven't gotten rid of it yet, so I've got to.
Yeah, right. Or not.
So that would be standards.
But it has to be dry, really, seriously. Any place, you can call them and pay that.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I just, the household good, for household goods, it's not really getting done all the time, but I understand as a business, I'm responsible for that.
Yes.
Understood.
Okay. The question we really have to answer is this a home occupation thing first? I don't remember the gunsmith. We did a gunsmith a while back.
Well, the gunsmith, that was quite a while ago. I think we would have approved the gunsmith, but there was three occupations on the same property, and the zoning administrator at that time would not allow three businesses on the same property. So we ended up denying.
I think that was not here for that.
We ended up denying the Gunsmith Shop. But was that based on the Gunsmith Shop? It was based on that it was three businesses on Oakview Drive.
I mean, that's the most similar I can think of to the.
Well, I just to tell you my thought process with this home occupation definition, because I dealt with it several times now, I rely on the first paragraph, you know, and then, you know, I treat A and B, you know, I take it literally when it says in A, home occupation includes but is not limited to.
Right.
So that tells me from that point on, those are a series of qualifying examples, but not necessarily limited to that list. So the controlling language is the introductory paragraph, which sets the parameters. And that was my thought process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it falls under the home occupation. It's no employees. It's no, there's no customers coming to the door. I mean, if you look at it, you can do sewing, you can do this, you can do that. It falls into that type of a home occupation, I think.
It's an accessory use. Mm-hmm. Service of the service character, and it's not manufacturing, adding value to something. Whether it's customarily conducted within the dwelling, but the residence is clearly secondary to the use of the dwelling, and it doesn't change the character thereof or have any exterior evidence of secondary service on the nameplate. I would have to say that it does make sense. And I think you're right. We've gone way beyond that list of possibles.
Item B is always a challenge. In addition, home occupation shall be interpreted to include the sale of stock in trade or commodities directly related to the permitted home occupation by the resident thereof for sale to the general public.
Yeah.
Not exactly the best sentence.
No.
But
we're hearing that you're not going to be.
Well, yeah, he's not that.
You're not going to be doing that, so that's a good thing.
I don't have any
stock. So B would not even apply.
Correct.
You don't want customers
to be. Which is a good thing, because that really does impact the neighborhood with cars coming up and people.
I did read it on this MSDES sheet here. I'll go through the disposal considerations. I'll read them into the record. Do not mix this product with aqueous or other product waste streams. Incineration of combustible waste material in a permitted facility in accordance with local and state federal regulations is the recommended disposal method. This product is not regulated by the EPA. It is the waste generator's responsibility to determine how disposal must occur. Disposal should be made in accordance with federal and state and local regulations. Minimize or avoid the generation of waste whenever possible. Disposal of waste, unused material, and empty containers in a licensed facility. And that's the end of it. Oh, and it says, do not discharge into drains, surface waters, or groundwater. So I think that should be...
That should be in the...
That should be a stipulation if you so choose.
But it's not under EPA regulations.
It is not under EPA regulations. I would imagine it's fairly expensive.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So what we're hearing, what we've heard several times, is that you're not discharging any of this into drains. And you have no intention to. And we're saying you can't.
Thank you.
And again, as I stress on these, and I think you recall on past home occupations, you know, from an enforcement point of view, I like to stress measurable, you know, standards, measurable conditions that you know, we can, in fact, enforce against. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, for example, if he does decide to dump this down the drain, that's something we can enforce against, because you could go into the tank, and I think there'd be residue there that you would find this present.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, no customers. That type of thing is measurable.
Right.
We can enforce against that. Hours of operation on this is a toughie. You know, I don't think if he wants to go down there and paint at 3 o'clock in the morning, nobody's going to know that.
Right. He's not going to impact the neighborhood.
So, and I don't see where that's an impact to the neighborhood, because it is a contained facility. But I just stress again, trying to make your conditions something that can in fact be enforced, and you know, we have things we can measure against.
Yeah, see, that's the tough part on this one, because we're talking a pocket club essentially, right? And big time mineral finish. We're looking at, which means industrial paint. You know what I mean? It's industrial finishing, that's where you see it. So we're talking about putting an industrial paint booth in the basement and operating from there. Now, I understand, obviously, no one wants your kids to be safer than you want. I get that. But I understand your complaint too, is where the concerns are. I mean, this is. This SDS sheet we keep going through. I mean, this is a nasty material. I mean, you go in there with a full body suit and respirators.
That's not.
So, I mean, you look at the read through it, I mean, that's what's required for you to do. And the other thing is, so again, we've got this chemical coming out that's heavier than air. So it's not going outside and dissipating into space. It's actually heavier than air, so it's following the ground and going to where. So that's my concern when it comes to this regulation. That's why I asked you initially about the ventilation, because I think that's the biggest concern. You've addressed the rest of the EPA concerns, we've addressed the home occupation qualifications, but you're on vacation for a week. We don't know what's going on in that paint booth. No one else does. What's leaking out? There's no way that. It's just tough for me to look at that one. Again, this chemical, again, with these filters.
I don't understand what you mean, how it would leak out.
You've got, well, I don't know what's going on there. Your family, your filter's supposed to be
on. Dozens of these sealed. In a cool, dry spot. Someone would literally have something in your dumping out.
You know, you can look at, I don't know what kind of condition you leave your shop in. There could be an emergency to walk out. I'm not talking the everyday scenario. I'm talking that the one thing that we can't control, your fan isn't working. You pass out inside of there because your fan's not working properly. You pass out inside of it, which is what it says the SDS would do. So you're passed out and now there's fumes leaking. We don't know where they're going. That's the wrestle with this one. We're not a regulatory agency here. I can't regulate your filters or do that, but that's my aim as far as making it safe and ensuring it's not a detriment to the neighborhood. That is the one piece that we can't control that we're letting out into the air.
Well, I think we can control.
Because we don't have the filters on, we don't know if filters are recommended.
How often do you change the filters?
I do about once every week.
Mm-hmm. What happens to those filters?
Has anybody seen this booth? Has anybody checked it? Has anybody, you know what I mean? Is it just put together in an update?
What? We can't, that's not us here, you know what I mean? We don't do regulatory, so that's an enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's my concern.
Where that is, and
ventilation is the biggest part that's going outside, obviously. So, how is it being treated for it goes outside? Got two filters.
It's really going to be,
but it's just, no, that's not a part of it. There's no way for it again. You can't regulate that necessarily, you know?
Well, I do think language to the effect of, you know, filters disposed of in a proper manner and in accord with, you know, applicable state and federal regulations. Disposal of the empty bottles, you know, I think those kind of conditions are as far as we can go as a local township.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's on its honor to some extent, but is there a way to ask for a lot of times you log sheets? Is there a way to simply log your filters? So if upon request, not if you have to do it monthly or weekly or yearly, but upon request, if someone will look at this space or have to go with it, and there's a phone call to me, it'd be nice to have that log to say you're changing every 2 weeks for 2 years or something like that. But I don't know if that's something we can even ask here. But just,
no, we could.
Well, we can do that because I have a log. I guess for every building that I've responsible for, I have a filter log.
I'm just saying.
That's not a lot. It's just a notebook and the date that you change the filters and the number of filters you change. I mean, that's not an unreasonable request.
It would be more upon the use, though. If you use it.
Well, it would depend on the use. Right? Well, I understand. You're not spraying anything. You wouldn't change filters. But it would be, so it doesn't have to be weekly, but it would just show that you're doing it.
I don't think that's about. I mean, it could be tied to his usage. You could, you know, he just makes a notation. You know, after three bottles, he changes the filter or five bottles, whatever it is, upon the completion of the
bottle. It wouldn't even be bottles because if he's been changing the filters every 2 weeks at this point, and he's not even used the whole bottle of that, it's. But I just think I don't think we would have to put a stipulation on when they were changed.
No.
I think we're going to log you did change, which I think is an easy thing to do, and I do it for all of our buildings because it just keeps us on top of that. And it's you know, I don't think it's a really simple issue. I certainly think it's not a bad idea because if there was a complaint, if somebody did smell something, then if this was approved, if somebody complains that there's a smell, somebody's going to come down and visit you. and they're going to check into it. So then you'd be able to have those kinds of records and things to see.
Is that something you're comfortable doing? Keeping the line on your filter and check?
If you deem it necessary.
What's that?
If you deem it necessary, sir.
Yes.
I have one last question on the sheet that he had printed out on number 7. Focus will be painting, automotive parts, firearms, gym equipment, small construction equipment, parts, steel tumblers, and then it says, but we are not limited to the above. That's kind of a broad, now we're kind of generalizing things here.
Well, it's, again, the small steel part is essentially what it comes down to. So if there's something that you didn't think about, that like someone wants some jewelry powder coated, I'm sure you do it for a price. You know, they're trying not to limit themselves as a business point of view. He's not.
What he coats is not limited, but the way he does it is limited.
And the size, and he has a space limitation. He can't put real big items in there, so it limits it to these smaller type items.
The only way in is your stairwell, correct? You don't have a walkout or anything like that, right?
So it's going to be very limited in the size of the items that he can spread.
He does have a walkout, does he?
No, I just said I didn't.
No, he doesn't have a walkout.
Inside your house, you go downstairs that way?
Inside. Well, out of the garage, maybe. In the basement?
It's in the garage.
Yeah, it's in the garage.
Noted. So there's 3 locks to get into the actual shop. 3 locked doors.
And you've got 3 locks on the
door. And a safe. Yeah. All.
Well, you have to do that. If you're going to have any firearms there, it has to be locked up. Yes. Very secure.
So it's very secure. And you're concerned with the fumes have more to do with the process than what he's doing. You know, what kind of objects he's doing. In this one process, it's not. That's limited. The process is limited. So
if I go for a walk out behind my parents' house and I stand 30, 40 feet from his back house when he's painting, and if I smell it, I make phone calls, correct?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. So he knows.
Mm-hmm. We've also opened this as an invitation for harassment now.
Well, he can't be 30 feet from, I mean, he can't be on property.
I'm on your property. His property, his house is only about 30, 40 feet from the property line.
Right.
And I don't know that we can guarantee every event about if something bad happens, but I think a lot of helps.
It just shows it's been being done regularly. It's not been lacked on. And it's just been done to be diligent. He's doing what he can in that. That's
right. So I think we've settled. Settle the issue of whether this is a home occupation.
Mm-hmm.
It is a home occupation.
Yeah.
The next thing is, the first is whether such use is going to be it should not engage with the health, safety, and health of the welfare of the neighborhood or adversely affect the environment. We've covered that. I think, you know, the fact that it's not a, that it's a, you know, it really wouldn't even be known unless you were, unless you knew that you had some persons here. It's well protected. The environment is well protected on this. And the second is that off-street parking spaces are adequate to handle expected attendance, and we don't expect any attendance. So that's, the next is that neighborhood character and surrounding property values are not in danger. Again, I don't think anybody coming to buy a house in that neighborhood would even know.
They wouldn't know you're going on.
This is going on. Unless they have something coded. The next is that such use will not cause undue traffic congestion or create a traffic hazard. If you're seeing all kinds of delivery trucks in constant traffic, I think you have a reason to complain.
Right.
And as I say, if it's a neighbor who's just getting a lot of hands on deliveries, you got no recourse.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I was just thinking, I've got a neighbor that probably gets 4 deliveries a day, and they don't have a business. And it's all Amazon. They have their meals delivered. They have their... It's unbelievable. I think that's the modern world we're going to live in. Is everything going to get delivered to your house?
I haven't got there yet.
Well, I have to admit that I do it a little bit.
Well, I think you should you know, acknowledge that it's a type 2 action because there is no, you know, physical expansion.
Right.
I would formally do that.
We have a motion to acknowledge that this is a type 2 action.
I'll make a motion that it's a type 2 action.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Which means that we don't need to do any more.
Correct.
Would you vote for it, please?
Mr. Elms?
Yes.
Mr. Fitzsimmons?
Yes.
Mr. Manning?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
And also, the public hearing is still open, just so you know.
Any more discussion, questions from the folks? And I'll close the public hearing. And,
I have notes for 7 items. I'm not saying it's just a, you know, I'm not saying it's complete, but what, right. Just what I've been tracking over here.
Right.
Number 1, proper disposal of waste, any filters, any empty bottles in accordance with state and federal regulations as per the MSS sheet. 2, record change of filters in a written logbook. 3, no employees. 4, no retail sales on site. 5, no customers on site. 6, no signage on site. 7, no employee or customer parking on site. That's all I have. I don't know if you have anything else.
And that was on top of what he listed here.
Yeah, we would incorporate what he's talking
about. He's given us here with that.
Yep.
So can we have a motion?
Well, you have both of us here.
He did that.
That's what you did. Well, let's see here. I'll make a motion and there's a sheet and appeal number 816 to approve it with the stipulations that were spelled out by the applicant, Mr. Ripley, and the 7 that the zoning administrator mentioned. Do I need to read them out, or
already had them on the record.
I'll second that.
Discussion? Would you poll the board?
Mr. Elms?
Yes.
Mr. Fitzsimmons?
Yes.
Mr. Manning?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
And just so everybody hears this, he'll be getting a notice of decision. Mm-hmm. I've been providing that since the first of the year for any items the board moves on, whether approved or disapproved. So that'll be for purposes of your ATF filing, and that'll be our record by which we track this stuff. So that'll incorporate all those items, bulleted items, you know, as per the resolution of your list and the 7 that I just...
And we thank you for coming to the meeting, and by all means, if you have any issues, call us. That would be the way we would like to design. And we certainly hope to bring you the list.
Right. And we do appreciate your input.
Tomorrow.
Please. Tomorrow? Yourself up here and get it tomorrow?
Yeah, why don't you give me until I'm in at 1 o'clock at 1 to 4. So if you can
You don't necessarily have to be that fast. I just want to give her.
Thank you.
I will have this.
Yeah. She's been. I'll try because I know you were delayed a month as it was.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Am I free to go?
Yes, you're a good, safe business.
Thank you, I appreciate it, sir.
That's very nice of you, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Have a good evening. Okay, for a while. Now, let's just move back to
the
next appeal number 817, the request for management support from the area of Paris, which is the number of the annual section 149. Proposing to construct a garage that would meet the required I've always done it, so I'm going to do it. The required foot yard setback in our two family residential zoning district is 5-1-4 treatment town assessment map. And you want to take care of Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
So tell us just what you're doing, just kind of capitalize.
So look, in the process of looking to add on to our house, so we want to convert our current two-car garage into a great room or living room type setup, and then construct a new two-car garage. Looking either, it's 20 foot deep, obviously, by limitations for what I can see.
He had a fairly decent plot plan. He had a survey, which he tried to show this on, and then I also gave you an aerial photograph and the last page on my staff report, and that's a the county just updated their system, so it's 2017 aerial photography now, as opposed to 2017.
So I have
I was having a little difficulty reading the numbers when I was looking at what.
Yeah, that's what I also had the same question. I think you were leaving an option open of a 20 by 20 or 20 by 24 garage.
Yep. That's what that means.
Is that so length or width?
Width.
Okay.
So what I was looking at doing on it is 20 feet extending from my current eave or wall section down, coming out 20 feet from there onto it, which matches the rest. So the one-story houses in that are recessed back to 60 feet, but they have the garage portraying out the front.
So the point being, though, it's very important in this hearing, or this proceeding, the length is going to be 20 feet.
Yes.
You may go 24 feet or 20 feet, but that doesn't affect the amount of relief.
That's not my relief. So.
Right.
Right. The 24 is that.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear on that. I didn't.
Because I haven't even.
Right.
It's all I got approval. I haven't had hired architect to do.
I wasn't able to get over to there, but I love Google, and you can bring up the pictures, and I did that. And I wanted you to look at this to make sure that I have these pictures that are correct. That's your house there, right?
Yes.
All right. And this is the house next door to you?
Yes.
That would be before you. This is your house here, right? Or, it doesn't look like that.
That's it. It's just a weird angle they do from Google. Because they don't let you go off.
So you're talking about. Your neighbors have a ranch with a garage on the front. You're talking about that. But as I was looking at the up from the up skyline, this looks like it's in line pretty much with yours.
It is kind of.
All right. So all those houses, as
all
I
of them are such bad.
All the exact same
dimension. Yes.
And it's right to the. And basically, it's
like 17 feet plus 40 through the driveway according to the. What I measured and what the drawing showed that I had from the building.
Now, Jim, on this picture that we've got here, what's the green? Is that the lot?
Yeah, that would be the lot.
Yeah, but it doesn't match. It doesn't always match the aerial photograph. That's the nature of the beast. It gets pretty skewed sometimes.
Well, I think it's then.
They're overlaying the tax map onto the aerial photograph, and it doesn't always match up.
Because the way he's got it shown in his. Plot plan.
His plot plan is actually
more accurate.
Well, the original document is a survey, so that's accurate. And he drew on his proposed garage. But
so
yes, that's much more accurate than that aerial photograph.
So when you wrote in a number between the side of the road and the front of your line, what number is that?
So it's 15.
That's 15.
Okay.
So it's 15 feet from the side of the road to the front of your line.
Yeah.
From this is the side of the road. This is his driving line. It's 15 feet from the side of the road to the front of his driveway.
So he's up in the plan there with the
also. So he got 15 feet that sat his, but between the back and the road.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was what I wanted to see.
This number is.
So,
I couldn't read that. That was.
In terms of your need for automobiles or vehicles, you have two in the household right now. Is there an expectation to have some more, and can you accommodate it?
I have, I'm either going to do this or we're going to put the house up for sale. That's kind of where we're headed on. I'll build a new one. probably out of town or out, only because of the cost and where the developments are that my wife likes. So
understood.
So
say no more.
So trying to look at, we like Penguinsville, we're both from South Huntsville, so prefer to stay. So mine is to try and match the houses. Plus, I have the way the builder drew the utilities in from there is my electric comes in on one side of the house, my natural gas comes in on the other. And it's a relatively new development, so when I started making talks with National Grid to move,
they wanted a lot of money.
They wanted to shift on money. And they didn't actually even want to assign contractor to it because the developments, I moved in 6 years ago, but it was, I think, only 4 or 5 year old development then, so it's probably 10 years old, so they were all sorts of red tape on the phone and to move your to the side. Because I wouldn't need a variance if I went to the side, but I think it doesn't match what the neighborhood has. Everybody kind of has the garage out to the front, and plus they want it.
What I'm trying to get at is that we don't negatively impact the off-street parking.
No, so what the plan is, what my plan is onto it, is if we do 20 by 20, which is where we're heading more, is I plan on extending my driveway up the side of the
new garage.
The new garage. So I'll have parking on the side of the garage.
Well, that would be helpful.
So that would allow my truck to be in the same, in that spot, and then actually where visitors or in-laws or whoever comes park is still the same as what would be current.
Believe me, when you get your children get older, you'll have at least 2 more cars.
Yeah.
That's $120,000 is pretty small. You have small cars.
I don't park my truck in the garage.
Yeah.
It's
because that is a small garage.
20 by 20.
Yeah.
Mine is more looking 24 by 20 to offset the workspace.
Well,
and then put the parking on the side of that.
So if you went 20 by 20, you're looking at 21 feet from your front line to the front of the garage?
Yeah, because the 20 by 20 doesn't include the 1 foot eave on the front.
Oh. Yeah, so my calculation of relief is slightly off then. It'd be almost...
I didn't know where you took the measurement from the wall or from the eave, so I said 21.
It's from the eave.
It would be from the eave.
So I said, I added a foot for the eave from the building size in this way.
So that means you'd have 21, we would be giving you 19 feet relief? Is that what then, if we were to approve this?
That'd be 47.5%, yeah, 19 feet of relief.
Yeah.
Just to explain, so we're 19 feet, it would be 21 feet off the roof.
It would be 21 feet to the front of the eave of the roof. It would be 21
to
feet
to the front.
To his property. Right.
Yeah, it's to the property.
36 feet to the road.
Right.
I think you could get it. Okay, I love it. Yeah.
That's where until I got the map out, I was like, shit, now I got to file more paperwork. And it is a homeowner association lot. I'm actually the president of it. I did the, there's no deed restriction to add to your residence.
Did we have any input from any neighbors?
Nope.
I talked with my neighbor to the Bickfords, are the neighbor to the right, which are standing facing the road. They're right of mine. And the Boltons are to the left of me.
You talked to both of them?
Either one of them have had issues with it. Onto it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly is important. And, you know, they would have gotten a letter.
They did.
Yep. And you spoke. Mm-hmm. And they're not here, they know nothing. So that certainly speaks to...
We actually had quite a list. Or, you know, it was such a dense neighborhood. There's a lot of notices went out here. So
yeah, the whole neighborhood showed up asking me what I was doing. So yeah. Gotta remember, I got the 55 and older section over there. They got nothing else to do but worry.
You'd be a little bit shocked how quick you'll be up there.
Well, because it's a loop neighborhood, so everybody walks in the neighborhood there, and you're out calling or doing anything. Say, hey, we got a notice that you're looking to move the garage.
Yeah, we have a Stephen Bolton's on the list, and yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean,
that matters a lot.
It does make a big difference. It's a large relief. But I don't think that you're asking for an impossible.
I mean, I guess the point I was trying to get at is and I think that's a good thing he did there with that streetscape. When you go down the street, is this going to be noticeably different, you know, than the other homes? Because I get his point about the basic configuration. You can see even in the aerial photograph, there's a lot of homes with the garage protruding, right, you know, from the front.
Yeah.
That part of the study that we're going to do,
right.
It is going to, look down the road, it is going to show that it's outward.
Yes, it is going to be closer to the road. And that's what I perceived as being the
principle. And those are the things that we have to wrestle with, is
right.
how is that going to be obtrusive to the community, to the neighborhood,
right.
That it sticks out further than the rest.
And my concern is it's a new development, so everything is kind of lined up very nicely.
Right.
But I also, you know, it's well designed, and I think it also is, your neighbors aren't complaining. We don't all go to bed at 7 o'clock.
They stay up late.
I heard a saying the other day, 60 is a new 50, but 9 o'clock is a new midnight.
Okay.
Well, I still tend to get up early.
Well, several times during the night.
Thank you. I thought that was pretty helpful when I looked at it. I hate to admit that I'm into this computer stuff, but it is handy. I mean, it really helps because you can get the aerial view, you can look at it, you really can get an idea of. I mean, I think it's going to have some impact in respect that it is going to stick out. Obviously, none of your neighbors were concerned about it. And I don't think it's going to be, in the fact that it's going to be the same look as the neighbor's garage. Mm-hmm. Actually, on both sides of it, right? But
the
other one is more like yours.
Yeah. Yep.
But there's some other houses in there with that type.
Almost every ranch that's in there, and the majority of the houses are ranches, have the grass garage off to the front.
Yeah.
If I'd known for future experience, then I would have pushed them back another 20 foot when I built mine. Then they were arguing. They'd argue with me about not having.
Well, our former building inspector, when he came down to approve my bond, or took up my gravity, I had purposely left it further away from the line. And he said to me, "Will you put that over?" And I said, "No. If I choose to want to put a side roof on the garage, I don't want to limit myself. I got the room. Why would I put it right to the lot?"
Yeah.
You know, so I left myself like 15 feet, but I didn't have to. You do think about those things, especially being on this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I can do that. It is a lot of relief, and we always wrestle with that. There's no set rules about what we can do, but the town sets the rules, and ultimately what we're doing here is allowing you an exception to that. Mm-hmm.
That's a rule. We've talked about 50%, but I think that's too big.
Well, yeah, we've only done it a couple of times, but this is pretty narrow. This is pretty much a different job.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's 49, like you said.
Probably 47.5%.
47.5, okay. Well, that's
pretty
close. But we need the requirements that we have to think about whether an undesirable change will be produced in the character of the neighborhood or detriment to nearby properties. I don't hear anybody complaining about it, and I think we would hear I think your argument about the ranch houses makes sense. This will be different. Because this is not a ranch house, but over the years, I expect people will be adding additions and whatever to these homes. So,
the biggest one is that the sunrooms off the back, they come for those to the center of the homeowner because there's nothing on access one, but that's been the biggest one out of single ranches, adding like 12 by 20s. on the backside.
I mean, one possible alternative would be to build your room on the back. Have you considered that?
The other one I have there is my septic's 12 foot off my foundation, and the runs move horizontal to that. That's why my pool's in the side yard.
Right, I saw the pool and everything. So you're pretty back to with your electrical and your gas line being on each side.
Yeah, which I wasn't thinking that when I had it until I had the 611 or whatever come market.
Right.
Because I was assuming the way my power and everybody else's comes in on at the moment, they all come in on the same side. For some reason, the way they did this pickoff for the gas on mine, it's opposite.
So and that is a large expense. That would be a very large expense. So I mean, we have to justify if we should choose to do this, that there was reasons that we would be willing to do it, that were issues that you didn't make this issue. This wasn't something that you created. It wasn't self-created.
So that answers the second condition, which is whether benefit can be achieved by some other method that's feasible for you to achieve. Sound too feasible to move your septic tank or your drain.
I mean, it can be done, but that almost makes it so expensive that it wouldn't be reasonable for you to put the addition on because it makes the whole process.
Really, when I did price this out, was the price off if I built new,
right,
compared to add on what my offset value between the two is. Right now, it's about $25,000 favorable to add the addition compared to buying the house.
Where are you talking?
So I looked at the Michaels Group's type houses. We priced out the one over in Southland Falls, or over on Bluebird Road.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I think they're going to have water issues there based on the fact that their drainage pond has got like 6.5 feet of water in their water retention pond right now. So,
and then the next condition is whether the requested area variance is substantial. And this is substantial, but again, we don't, you know, these area variances, we don't have to meet each one of these perfectly.
Well, there is no set.
The next is whether proposed variance will have an adverse impact on the physical or environmental conditions in the neighborhood or district. And I don't think so.
I honestly don't. I think when I first read this, I think the Google Map helped.
Yes.
Because when I first read this, with your application, I was reluctant because it wasn't going to stick out long. Then I looked at it from the Google Map and things, and I thought, you know, I really don't think it's going to be that noticeable. And I got to believe that your neighbors felt that way. But it'd be here.
Absolutely. And the last factor we need to look at is whether the alleged difficulty was self-created, which consideration is relevant but doesn't preclude us granting it. And I don't think it's self-created.
You didn't anticipate that you were going to want to add out of the house when you bought it, and you wouldn't have, you didn't put all these things in the way so that you only had this option. So that's only the self-created.
So we don't need a seeker.
Yep.
We don't need approval from the county. Opinion from the county. and I think the public hearing is closed.
Yep.
Unless we have any comments.
Yep.
I've been told that I need to have a vote on closing the public hearing. Do you know what your opinions on that?
I think you need a vote, but I wouldn't. It doesn't need to be roll call. You could just, you know, a polling of the board.
So you could just say,
so all in favor of closing the public hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Close. It's a big public hearing.
Yes.
Last one was.
I was wishing I was first after the last one. I was like, we've got here to go.
I felt that was very successful.
Yeah.
I think we got a lot of information, and that's important.
So, at this point, I'd entertain a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion for appeal number 817. The request for area variance, right?
Yes.
That we, what was it, 49 feet? Was it better than that? 19 feet is the relief that we approve a 19 foot relief on the front
setback, and which is a 40-foot front setback.
The only thing I would ask as a condition is when you apply for your building permit, that you submit a surveyed plot plan to that effect.
Yes. With a surveyed plot plan to the effect showing the structure and the dimension off of the roof overhead to that, because that setback has to be to that.
So so if you need more, now's the time to ask, because that's what will need to be shown.
If we're going to give you 19 feet relief, 21 feet is going to be from the line to that.
To the edge of the eave.
And then I'm going off the dimensions of us, I can do with 20 feet off the front to that. I mean, I don't see.
Okay.
If you want to give me an extra foot just for variation, I mean, with slope, do it. But
I mean, I think in the
scheme, I would rather do that now.
I think in the scheme of things, I don't think a foot's going to make a difference to us and to the community, but it might make a big difference to you. We've only done a few times, but I think the fact that this doesn't really appear to be an issue to anybody, I would change it to 20. We give them 20 foot relief. It's going to be 50%.
With the condition of a site plan with your building permit.
But with the condition that you have a site plan with those dimensions, so the building permit is given to you, knowing that it's going to be no more than that.
That's just having Van Heusen or
whatever. Correct.
Drop the 20 by whatever it turns out to be into the plan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Second?
I second the motion.
Discussion? Mr. Holmes?
Mr. Holmes?
Yes.
Mr. Concerns?
Yes.
Mr. Manning?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
Okay. We thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's review the minutes.
And I think you have that letter from Chris Music. I don't know whether he was thinking that you were just going to take that up without him being present. If you don't, if you're okay with that.
Oh,
no, not you.
Thank you.
Or if he was, I don't know. I know he wrote you the letter, but I just don't know.
He wanted us to. I didn't print it out. He wanted to amend the approval of the special permit application based on information from town hall that he wants to not
merge the lots.
Merge the lots. He wants to keep it separate.
Now, just to let you know, he individually was perfectly happy to do that. The person that was opposed to that idea was Peggy, our town assessor, and she's doing it, you know, in defense of her position. Is it's in the best interest of the town to keep them separate.
She's
resistant to do that. I mean, he could technically force it by going down to the county and filing it, but she was opposed to that.
I don't think he needs more ground. It's going to lower
lower tax revenue to the town.
When they take those two, put them together, the thing.
But at the same time, you're in a situation, if you don't use buying the lots, that's the whole point of bringing that up. I think maybe it was even easier. The whole point is, if you don't, now you create a situation where you've kind of got two non-conforming. You've got an issue where you have five tiny houses that you can't get to because you're on a different piece of property. And now you've got setback concerns and all that kind of stuff.
Too. Yeah,
that's part of the reason for putting combining them together, wasn't it? Because the way it was shared access, the shared drive.
That was,
he's got his five tiny houses right on the property line.
That was the reason.
Setbacks, considerations, things like that. So
well, it's not that they couldn't be met, but it got to be a little trickier.
I think the big concern that I have is we had a lot of people here for that meeting, and we spoke that was important to us that it be put together as one lot, and there was a lot of people that read that meeting that were inclined to think that should happen. So for us to change it now,
if you don't want to do it, you're perfectly within your rights to not change it. So.
If you put them together, I understand what Peggy's saying, you know, and I certainly want the town to get paid for it, but I think that we had, as you pointed out, we did that for a reason.
I think it's a better idea. I mean, I'm going to have to reread the minutes and see, you know,
exactly what.
If you want to table it, you can do that too. Gary.
Well, I think there was issues. Well, I think one of the, I do remember that some of the neighbors asked the question, well, what would have to be sold on the lot? Once you put this in, he could sell one. And then that changes. You're doing you're doing this based on we're allowing him to do these and set these in here because of that amount of space. If he takes the one lot and says, we can't sell it, there's nothing that we can do to stop it unless we made him make it one lot. And I do remember that discussion. And I'm inclined to think that we should stick with what we did. I don't think that the impact of the town and the revenues is going to be that severe.
I remember more to do with setbacks and things like that.
It was.
But I think Kevin's point is well taken. This business was to occupy that whole property that he was talking about. And the way he guaranteed that is to make it one lot.
And that was what our goal was, to say that he couldn't sell that one lot. Setbacks and all involved.
Well, he always has the right to re-subdivide, but at that point, then that's a whole other application. It gets looked at. You know, the setbacks are a consideration. You know, and I think there might be a period of time where he can't subdivide it once he joins.
Once we've changed it, once he's put back, yeah, we'll get a time period before he can do that. So, I don't speak for myself, but I'm trying to stick with what we did.
I
think
we go around this. Is this?
How was it worded in his letter? What did he request?
He wanted it to be removed, didn't he?
He's requesting an amendment to the approved special permit application.
And if we don't make an amendment to it, it just stays the way it is, right?
Right.
And we even amended that in a public hearing.
Well, that'd be up to you. If you think if it was a major change, then yes, you would have another public hearing, and it would be heard by the public. But if you think it's minor, then you can do it without. Or if you want to deny it, you can deny it.
I personally, my personal opinion is that we stick with what we did. I think it was good. Yeah. Okay. And I think that he should just join them like we asked.
I think you're right. If we were to amend it, we would have to.
Well, it's all good.
As many people were in here talking about it.
We didn't have everybody bad. Well, I'm just saying, I don't think...
If you view that as a substantive change that requires public notification, then that would be done.
Yeah, well, we have to
the discussion here.
We would have to rehear it. And I honestly do.
You'd have to re-notice the public. And
I think the cost of re-noticing everybody and all that stuff we had to do...
I think in that one, that this instance, my two cents is just that we did our diligence, we went through a thorough
effort. You certainly did.
We had the consensus of the board, we had town input, we all agreed upon our decision that was amicable, and I don't have any convincing reason to change it. No. Really. We don't let people do additions to make more money or save money. Why should we make this any different?
I would agree. I just think we
can. I don't ever consider tax rolls when I consider the ZBA application. Okay. So I don't buy what this is.
I think we should stick around with it.
I hope that all the guys tell us about the tax bill too. That like remind us that, hey, town getting money from us.
I'd recommend a quick resolution, and again, you don't have to pull the board, but just get
business to approve.
Yeah.
So
I think we did it.
The resolution is that we would deny the requested amendment. Doesn't he make the motion or
yep.
I'll make a motion that we deny the requested amendment and the case of what does it have his number on it, the case number?
Oh boy. I would just say as contained in the letter dated.
As contained in the letter dated, what's the date? June 12th, 2019, from Mr. Music.
Yes.
I second that motion.
Discussion?
You can pause. You said we don't have to have it. We don't have to have it.
No,
I can just pause.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
You want to accept the minutes?
Okay. Does anybody have any comments or questions on that?
I do not.
I have just a couple of, not typos, but whatever, but I gave them to, I said, bare minimum.
I make a motion we accept the minutes from month of April. April's minutes with the amendments that the chairman has pointed out.
Second.
Okay, I want to hear that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So the minutes are accepted.
I have one more item. Kevin and I were talking casually beforehand. The amendment to the, or the revision of the zoning code is officially starting. The initial thought was to do it as we did with the comp plan. You know, we go through the section by section revisions with each board, meaning the zoning board and the planning board, throughout the process, and at the end it would likely require a joint meeting again for both boards to consider the entire revision, the entire revised chapter, and then there'd be a public hearing by both boards, and then it would be a resolution passing it on to the town board for consideration, just like the comp plan, and then it's subject to public hearing and seeker by the town board. However, I think, you know, Kevin makes kind of a good point. You know, that approach is fine, that can still happen, but it might be good to have a local committee to be formed, consisting of a couple members from each, the zoning board, planning board, and residents, and just have some initial meetings to discuss, you know, ideas and changes that are needed in the code, and, you know, if there's some creative ideas or some special nuances that should be considered, you know, just have an opportunity to have that kind of a discussion in that format. I don't think that's a bad suggestion. This is an important step. We haven't done it in 30 years. You know, it might be, and the last attempt was made in 2009 or 10 that never, you know, crossed the finish line. So it's never a bad thing to have more input. So I would not be opposed to that. It's something we could certainly try to facilitate.
I would say some kind of workshop, get business, you know, get local businesses involved too, you know.
Yep.
Especially comes up Route 9 corridor, 197, the 32, you know, Bloomer rather, we're trying to do that. Just,
well, this is something you do not want to do with even the appearance of the public not being involved.
Right.
It's very, very important.
Very, very important to the public involved. Yeah. And as I said to Jim, I don't want to see it become, I know that these committees can become a product because they get bogged down. They get, I mean, I came to the town meeting last night with the moratoriums and the solar panel farms and the two family houses. And I was listening to people that got up and talked, and I thought, you know, if you hear yourself, when you repeat, when you're on the third row of repeating the exact same thing, you've really lost everybody. And you don't want committees to get like that because they can. And so it should be limited.
Well, I know, like, for example, Gardner, in his first, like, 3 or 4 months of his term, he had a meeting.
Yes.
You know, a workshop like that.
They
invited the board members from each board, and they had residents there, business people too.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, I wasn't at it, but I read the minutes from it, and it was a pretty dynamic.
It really was.
Engaging discussion.
And it was moderated, and they limited the amount of time that some people could talk, because, I can talk too much, I know that. I try to keep it down to a hard work at it. And if I had to remind you to shut up, I can take it. I got the control. But I think there's a lot can be benefited by having that available. Not make it how it's done, but some of the process.
Sure.
A part of the process.
Certainly.
So the point being, you know, the board would be involved all throughout, but I think it would be worthwhile to do this extra effort to maybe have a, if you all want to come to that, those meetings, fine, but at least a couple of you come, and then same thing with the planning board, and then, like you say, get some business people, some residents additionally involved. And I can go to Todd and the town board and say that was a suggestion coming back, and it's certainly something I support.
I think we should try to see if the town board will. I think it'll help us, I really do.
I think there's a difference between having a workshop with a large group and having a small committee that actually does the work, too. And I think that's probably, you know, every 6 months, maybe have some kind of workshop where you have the business people and whatever that they want to have tell you what they want to see there. But to say, to have the large group meeting, that's part of the problem that last time.
Well, that was a little large. That was a little large.
It was unwieldy. It was unwieldy. You know, and that just, that becomes a problem.
There was some people that, and honestly, it wasn't me at that meeting. There was a couple of people that really.
No, it wasn't.
Really bent over that meeting.
Yeah, well, that can happen to them.
Which is not beneficial.
But I assume that what you're doing is, I mean, you don't have anything to present to us tonight.
No. We're at the very, very start of this.
But I assume that you're going to have some broad framework for the zoning first.
Yes.
And that's going to be presented.
And just to let you, my general approach is the two most controversial aspects of updating the zoning, which I think we're going to have to get into a little bit, is the content of the use schedules themselves. You know, in other words, what the allowed uses are and how they're allowed, whether they're as of right by special permit. Do we even want to continue with the special permit process? Some communities, I think I'm seeing a trend where communities are going away from special permitting and just saying, it's either allowed as of right or you go to site plan review. And yet, obviously, you're always going to have your variances and your interpretations. So that's one aspect that's controversial. The other is the map districting. Mm-hmm. And I think we're also going to get into that a little bit, at least from the standpoint of, as you know, there are many instances in the community where parcels are split zoned. Mm-hmm. And from my standpoint as administrator, I really dislike that. You know, and so that means lines have got to be pushed one way or the other, and some tough decisions have got to be made. And then there may be even instances outright where you want to change district boundaries because of the passage of time, you know, things have changed. Or, because I think Kevin suggested this in the past, there may be a need for a new district. You know, we could be adding some sort of like a neighborhood commercial or, you know, something like that, hamlet, I don't know, some sort of new district may be desired. So that's got to be, if that's the case, that's got to be set down. The other thing we got to come to grips with is, you know, adult uses have to be allowed. You know, it's well known in case law that you cannot zone them out. Yeah. So you've got to set that use down somewhere as being permissible. Not as of right, but it's got to be allowed in some kind of, yeah, in some fashion. So, you know, and you heard last night, technology has created changes, need for change. Solar now is a consideration. Electric charging stations for vehicles. Those are two relatively new technologies, and you know, there's going to be those kind of changes. So
there's going to be some. I think it's the opportunity. I've read that you guys have already talked about this, and the board has talked about this. It's an opportunity to address some things as our town is becoming more populated. We're running into issues with the burning. You know, people that have big bonfires in their yard and how it impacts the neighbors. And I'm not. You don't want to be overly controlling and overly ordinance, you know, with all these ordinances and all that rules. But if there isn't anything, then you have no choice. You can't do anything about it. So there has to be some rules.
Well, and also the other thing you have to keep an eye on. I agree with you, but you know, code enforcement, as we all know, is a very difficult proposition, and it can quickly be very expensive if you built a code that is, you know, tending to want to require a lot of enforcement. So it's fine to have all those provisions in there, but they're only going to be as good as the enforcement practice that follows.
Well, I think this is a time for our town as we're growing, and they admitted that last night at the meeting, and you got, that's why they're doing more turning on the duplexes and the two families and all that stuff, because we had this sprouting up of all these things. Then I think we need to address, do we have, is it time for us to hire a part-time code enforcement officer?
Well, I think that decision's already been made. It's actively being advertised. It just can't get anybody, you know, qualified.
Oh, they haven't?
It's been advertised for months.
For a part-time code enforcement officer?
Dedicated half-time code enforcement.
I'll put the application on tomorrow.
It's right there on the door as you walk out.
I don't want that to be public.
There's
gone. Brian Hook is retired. There's so, a new retirement job.
So those are all things we gotta, you know, we gotta consider, and we gotta be very thoughtful.
Well, I agree with you. And if you have too many rules and there's no enforcement, it's no good. But what I can tell, and I have to be honest, this is a personal pet peeve for me because I used to heat my house with firewood for years, and then the town had to pass rules about, and I never did it with an outside boiler, but they had to pass rules about the outside boilers because. And I understand, in the summertime, the people that had them would smudge them to be able to heat the domestic hot water, and they would just have this little roll of smoke rolling out, and it's a nice weather, you want to open your windows, and the smoke comes in. Well, let me tell you, a bonfire next door to your house, 24 hours a day, 7 days
well, again,
does the exact same thing. If you have to have some rules, because if you don't, there's no recourse. You can't call up and say, do something about the bonfire. And then they say that's their property, they have a right to use their property.
Well,
that's fine.
It's one of those things. You can buy a kit down at Home Depot or Lowe's. But
that's where you write into the code. You say it either has to be in a fireplace, a fire, you know, pit. I mean, the thing you buy, not a pit. Because if you put a pit in, they're going to dig an 8-foot hole and they're going to have a bonfire.
And then that's our neighbor has a huge fire.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It can't be a pit. That, you know, I grew up on that house. My father, you know, I'm not against having a backyard fire. My father back then, with no neighbors, when I was a kid, 3-4 years old, he had a fireplace built on a brick. And every Saturday night, we'd go out in good weather and have a fire and cook over it, and all those kids play in the backyard. We didn't have this big bonfire where it's lighting up the entire neighborhood. And that's what we've come to now.
Okay.
You know, just in general, I mean, I think, you know, we probably want to hear from us some general ideas about destruction, what we would like to see. But I think there's also, through the years, we've seen some very specific things.
Oh, yes.
I think we want to try to think back.
Oh, they're exactly. And it's time to start jotting those things down.
Yeah.
There's terminology, there's definition issues.
I think about the storage building. We've talked about forever about how the setbacks really don't make any sense for a storage building for a small garden shed.
Yeah,
right.
A
lot of the dimensional requirements are out of whack.
Yes.
You know, they allow for a 32,000 or 20,000 square foot lot, even 15,000 square foot lot, and the setbacks are too large for a 15,000 square foot lot.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're going to allow that, you have to have fairly liberal setback standards because it doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah. So, I think we're going to be happy with this. What
was the consensus last night on the solar? What was the feel?
I was not there. You were there.
I think they just want to. It was mostly the farmers over here. They want to be able to have. I don't know. I couldn't get a sense for what the town was really, other than they just want to evaluate it, is the way they talk.
Did they close the public hearing, though?
No.
Okay.
No, the public hearing is not closed. Either of those.
Okay.
There's
a moratorium on solar farms.
Yes.
Right. There was a moratorium on solar farms. There's a moratorium on two-family.
Multi-family dwellings. Duplexes and multi-family.
And
the zoning building could be possibly addressed, too, that way.
Oh, yeah. That's both those things will be.
The other thing when we talk about kennels is one that's come up a couple of times.
Yeah. Yep, that's another one.
And the front setback kind of setup is we do it different than everybody else. We do drip edging, but then we do front door as far as where your setbacks measure from. That's our width, rather, a lot width.
Well, there's all sorts of structural problems. I mean, when you look at the entire code beyond the zoning, fences are in separate chapters, signs are in separate chapters, so right now there is no relief from the fence standard from this board, because the fence is outside of the zoning chapter, so you have no authority over it. And so right now, technically speaking, if somebody can't meet our fence code, they're just dead in the water.
And you can't put the fence up.
You can't put the fence up. And it has this very quirky standard where it works off of the rear corner of the building rather than the front corner.
Right. You can't. It has to be the back corner of the building.
That's very cumbersome.
The 4 foot fence.
That causes a lot of problems.
And my question is, as we've let these houses built like they have and so close to us, and the houses are so big, why is it 6 foot? Why can't it be 8 foot?
It is 8 foot. It does allow for 8 foot. Most read 6 foot because that's the standard panel that you get out in the lumber yard.
You can't put an 8 foot in.
And ours reads 8 foot right now.
Okay, it should be 8 foot.
Well, another question though is like some of the so I was talking about business development, because some of the things that I'm just curious, and you guys know more than me, but is there anything in our zoning that's been prohibiting or holding back? Like, I know you have a tech park down there off of Bluebird with like one business in it.
Well, that's not the zoning that's doing that.
But that wasn't the zoning issue that held that back.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm just curious if there's any other things in there. We're looking at the zoning, you guys talk to people, I do as well. Is there anything in the Route Diamond corridor that's only in there?
I think we do have the benefit of one of the things that's come that's good that we've waited so long is that we've gotten to see now what's unfolded with brick and mortar retail. You know, the traditional commercial zoning districts are dead because retail's dead. So one of the things I would suggest we strongly consider, and this would address the multifamily problem. If multifamily is becoming a problem out in the town where it's located right now because of its close proximity to the single family residential, we can pull it back and introduce true mixed use into what has been our traditional commercial corridor. Mm-hmm. You know, because Route 9 is not going to be, you know, this traditional just all retail, you know, stores popping up. Those days are dead.
No, we need to really push the professional office.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, professional office.
We really need to push them.
And you gotta have residential units right within it.
Yeah, they have residential units above them. And that's really, if we're going to do anything with the
Route 9. And that's where the multifamily can go and not be, you know, such a concern to the single family neighborhoods.
Well,
and you have the traffic and the infrastructure to support it.
You're going
to
have sewer down there, so that's the perfect place for multifamily above a professional office kind
of. Or in the back parts of the lots. The lots are fairly deep.
Yeah.
You know, you could continue to have the mixed use commercial to the front, potentially the residential to the rear.
So that's what I'm wondering about too, in the zoning board. Like, I know like when you're in Saratoga, they've gone away from the traditional parking lot, like we have the Grand Union Hanford, right? They've gone away from the traditional parking lot, front the business in the back, they don't want to see
well, they don't bring the business out around the back. We recommend
these
well.
Are things, you know,
that was all recommended.
Well, again, there's ways to achieve both. The businesses still do want to see. They want their parking seen from the street. But what can be done is parking is allowed in the side yard, and the building can still come to the front. So you have the building near the road as well as the park.
Is there anybody pointed out to you the flag that was put up on the Route 9 where the animal hospital was?
I believe so.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah, when we talk about code enforcement and enforcing issues, I drove by there, I couldn't believe it.
Well, I'll just give you a little, I'm just going to share what we got, it's getting late, but I want to share with you a little sampling of code enforcement.
Yeah.
We took a guy to court who was allegedly selling snow plows out of his house and installing them as a commercial business.
Mm-hmm.
We started that proceeding last November, December. It finally got adjudicated yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
Five adjournments.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand. So I guess what makes it frustrating to me is that we go through all this process and we do all these things and we have the good neighbors that come before us and say, look, I'd like to do something. We have to send it back and say, I'm sorry, we can't help you. They're not happy. And then you got people like that that just do what they want to do. And there it is. And what do you do about it? You know? I mean, if you look at that, there's definitely not enough green on that property now.
Well,
that change
the problem with code enforcement. You need to basically find enough people to pay for that kind of litigation.
Right.
I mean, that's about the problem. You've got to fund, you know, you got to fundraise
There's all sorts of things that have to be done.
Make it full time.
But so that's a little update on the zoning. So you're going to be hearing more about that, and I will bring forth the committee suggestion.
Is Kevin
going to
for his new job?
Yeah.
Our next meeting is 4th.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.